After supper, Jewel rode over to the bend to get Peabody. I heard he was to be there today at Varner's. Jewel come back about midnight. Peabody had gone down below Inverness somewhere, but Uncle Billy come back with him, with a satchel of horse physic. Like he says, a man ain't so different from a horse or a mule, come long, come short, except a mule or a horse has got a little more sense. "What you been into now, boy?" he says, looking at Cash. "Get me a mattress and a chair and a glass of whiskey," he says. He made Cash drink the whiskey. Then he run Ants out of the room. "Lucky it was the same leg it broke last summer," Ant says, mournful, mumbling and blinking. "That's something." We folded the mattress across Cash's legs and set the chair on the mattress, and me and Jewel sat on the chair and the gal held the lamp, and Uncle Billy taken a chew of tobacco and went to work. Cash fought pretty hard for a while, until he fainted. Then he laid still, with big balls of sweat standing on his face like they had started to roll down and then stopped to wait for him. When he waked up, Uncle Billy had done packed up and left. He kept on trying to say something until the gal leaned down and wiped his mouth. "It's his tools," she said. "I brought them in," Darl said. "I got them." He tried to talk again. She leaned down. "He wants to see them," she said. So Darl brought them in where he could see them. They shoved them under the side of the bed where he could reach his hand and touch them when he felt better. Next morning, Ant's taken that horse and rode over to the bend to see Snopes. Him and Jewel stood in the lot talking a while. Then Ant's got on the horse and rode off. I reckon that was the first time Jewel ever let anybody ride that horse. And until Ant's come back, he hung around in that swole-up way, watching the road like he was half a mind to take out after Ants and get the horse back. Along toward 9 o'clock, it begun to get hot. That was when I see the first buzzard. Because of the wetting, I reckon. Anyway, it wasn't until well into the day that I see them. Lucky the breeze was setting away from the house, so it wasn't until well into the morning. But soon as I see them, it was like I could smell it in the field a mile away from just watching them, and them circling and circling for everybody in the county to see what was in my barn. I was still a good half a mile from the house when I heard that boy yelling. I thought maybe he might have fell into the well or something, so I whipped up and come into the lot on the lope. There must have been a dozen of them setting along the ridgepole of the barn, and that boy was chasing another one around the lot like it was a turkey, and it just lifting enough to dodge him and go flopping back to the roof of the shed again where he had found it setting on the coffin. It had got hot then, right, and the breeze had dropped or changed or something, so I went and found Jewel, but Lula come out. "You got to do something," she said. "It's an outrage." "That's what I aim to do," I said. "It's an outrage," she said. "He should be lawed for treating her so." "He's getting her into the ground the best he can," I said. So I found Jewel and asked him if he didn't want to take one of the mules and go over to the bend and see about Ants. He didn't say nothing. He just looked at me with his jaws going bone white and them bone white eyes of his'n. Then he went and begun to call Darl. "What you fixin' to do?" I said. He didn't answer. Darl come out. "Come on," Jewel said. "What you aim to do?" Darl said. "Going to move the wagon," Jewel said over her shoulder. "Don't be a fool," I said. "I never meant nothing."
You couldn't help it.
And Dahl hung back, too. But nothing wouldn't suit Jewel. Shut your goddamn mouth, he says. It's got to be somewhere, Dahl said. We'll take out soon as Pa gets back. You won't help me? Jewel says, them white eyes of his'n kind of blaring and his face shaking like he had an auger. No, Dahl said, I won't. Wait till Pa gets back. So I stood in the door and watched him push and haul at that wagon. It was on a downhill, and once I thought he was fixing to beat out the back end of the shed. Then the dinner bell rung. I called him, but he didn't look around. Come on to dinner, I said. Tell that boy. But he didn't answer, so I went on to dinner. The gal went down to get that boy, but she come back without him. About half through dinner, we heard him yelling again, running that buzzard out. It's a outrage, Lula said, a outrage. He's doing the best he can, I said. A fella don't trade with Snopes in 30 minutes. They'll sit in the shade all afternoon to dicker. Do? She says. Do? He's done too much already. And I reckon he had. Trouble is, his quitting was just about to start out doing. He couldn't buy no team from nobody, let alone Snopes, withouten he had something to mortgage he didn't know would mortgage yet. And so when I went back to the field, I looked at my mules and same as told them goodbye for a spell. And when I come back that evening and the sun shining all day on that shed, I wasn't so sure I would regret it. He come riding up just as I went out to the porch, where they all was. He looked kind of funny, kind of more hangdog than common, and kind of proud, too. Like he had done something he thought was cute but wasn't so sure now how other folks would take it. I got a team, he said. You bought a team from Snopes? I said. I reckon Snopes ain't the only man in this country that can drive a trade, he said. Sure, I said. He was looking at Jewel with that funny look. But Jewel had done got down from the porch and was going toward the horse to see what Ants had done to it, I reckon. Jewel, Ant says. Jewel looked back. Come here, Ant says. Jewel come back a little and stopped again. What you want? He said. So you got a team from Snopes, I said. He'll send them over tonight, I reckon. You'll want an early start tomorrow, long as you'll have to go by Motson. Then he quit looking like he had been for a while. He got that badgered look like he used to have, mumbling his mouth. I do the best I can, he said. For God, if there were e'er man in the living world suffer the trials and floutings I have suffered. A fella that just beat Snopes in a trade ought to feel pretty good, I said. What did you give him, Ants? He didn't look at me. I give a chattel mortgage on my cultivator and cedar, he said. But they ain't worth $40. How far do you aim to get with a $40 team? They were all watching him now, quiet and steady. Jewel was stopped halfway back, waiting to go on to the horse. I give other things, Ant said. He begun to mumble his mouth again, standing there like he was waiting for somebody to hit him and him with his mind already made up not to do nothing about it. What other things? Dahl said. Hell, I said, you take my team. You can bring them back. I'll get along some way. So that's what you were doing in Cash's clothes last night, Dahl said. He said it just like he was reading it out in the paper. Like he never give a darn himself one way or the other. Jewel had come back now, standing there, looking at Anse with them marble eyes of his'n. Cash aimed to buy that talking machine from Surratt with that money, Dahl said. Ant stood there, mumbling his mouth. Jewel watched him. He ain't never blinked yet. But that's just $8 more, Dahl said, in that voice like he was just listening and never give a darn himself. That still won't buy a team. Ants looked at Jewel quick, kind of sliding his eyes that way. Then he looked down again. God knows if there were e'er a man, he says. Still, they didn't say nothing. They just watched him, waiting, and him sliding his eyes toward their feet and up their legs, but no higher. And the horse, he says. What horse? Jewel said. Ants just stood there. I be darned, if a man can't keep the upper hand of his sons, he ought to run them away from home, no matter how big they are. And if he can't do that, I be darned if he oughtn't to leave himself. I be darned if I wouldn't. You mean you tried to swap my horse? Jewel says. Ant stands there, dangle-armed. For 15 years I ain't had a tooth in my head, he says. God knows it. He knows in 15 years I ain't et the vittles he aimed for man to eat to keep his strength up. And me saving a nickel here and a nickel there so my family wouldn't suffer it, to buy them teeth so I could eat God's appointed food. I give that money. I thought that if I could do without eating, my sons could do without riding. God knows I did. Jewel stands with his hands on his hips, looking at Ants. Then he looks away. He looked out across the field, his face still as a rock, like it was somebody else talking about somebody else's horse, and him not even listening. Then he spit, slow, and said, "Hell!" And he turned and went on to the gate and unhitched the horse and got on it. It was moving when he come into the saddle, and by the time he was on it, they was tearing down the road like the law might have been behind them. They went out of sight that way, the two of them looking like some kind of a spotted cyclone. "Well," I says, "you take my team," I said. But he wouldn't do it. And they wouldn't even stay. And that boy chasing them buzzards all day in the hot sun until he was nigh as crazy as the rest of them. "Leave Cash here anyway," I said. But they wouldn't do that. They made a pallet for him with quilts on top of the coffin and laid him on it and set his tools by him. And we put my team in and hauled the wagon about a mile down the road. "If we'll bother you here," Ant says, "just say so." "Sure," I said. "It'll be fine here. Safe, too. Now let's go back and eat supper." "I thank you," Ant said. "We got a little something in the basket. We can make out." "Where'd you get it?" I said. "We brought it from home." "But it'll be stale now," I said. "Come and get some hot vittles." But they wouldn't come. "I reckon we can make out," Ant said. So I went home and et and taken a basket back to them and tried again to make them come back to the house. "I thank you," he said. "I reckon we can make out." So I left them there, squatting around a little fire waiting. God knows what for. I come on home. I kept thinking about them there, and about that fellow tearing away on that horse. And that would be the last they would see of him, and I'd be darned if I could blame him. Not for wanting to not give up his horse, but for getting shut of such a darn fool as Ants. Or that's what I thought then. Because be it darn if there ain't something about a darn feller like Ants that seems to make a man have to help him, even when he knows he'll be wanting to kick himself next minute. Because about an hour after breakfast next morning, Eustace Grimm that works Snope's place come up with a span of mules, hunting Ants. I thought him and Ants never traded, I said.
Sure, Eustace said. All they liked was the horse. Like I said to Mr. Snopes, he was letting this team go for $50, because if his Uncle Flem had just kept them Texas horses when he owned them, Ants wouldn't have never...
The horse? I said. Ants's boy taken that horse and cleared out last night. Probably halfway to Texas by now, and Ants...
I didn't know who brung it, Eustace said. I never see them. I just found the horse in the barn this morning when I went to feed, and I told Mr. Snopes, and he said to bring the team on over here.
Well, that'll be the last they'll ever see of him now, sure enough. Come Christmas time, they'll maybe get a postal card from him in Texas, I reckon. And if it hadn't have been Jewel, I reckoned it'd have been me. I owe him that much myself. I'll be darned if Ants don't conjure a man some way. I'll be darned if he ain't a sight.
Vardaman. Now there are seven of them in little tall black circles. Look, Dar, I say. See? He looks up. We watch them in little tall black circles of not moving. Yesterday there were just four, I say. There were more than four on the barn. Do you know what I would do if he tries to light on the wagon again? I say. What would you do? Dar says. I wouldn't let him light on her, I say. I wouldn't let him light on Cash either. Cash is sick. He is sick on the box. But my mother is a fish.
We got to get some medicine in Motson, Pa says. I reckon we'll just have to.
How do you feel, Cash? Dar says.
It don't bother none, Cash says. Do you want it propped a little higher?
Dar says. Cash has a broken leg. He has had two broken legs. He lies on the box with a quilt rolled under his head and a piece of wood under his knee.
I reckon we ought to left him at Armstead's, Pa says.
I haven't got a broken leg, and Pa hasn't, and Darl hasn't, and...
It's just the bumps, Cash says. It kind of grinds together a little on a bump. It don't bother none.
Jewel has gone away. He and his horse went away one supper time.
It's because she wouldn't have us beholden, Pa says. For God, I do the best that e'er man.
Is it because Jewel's mother is a horse, Dar? I said.
Maybe I can draw the ropes a little tighter,
Dar says. That's why Jewel and I were both in the shed, and she was in the wagon, because the horse lives in the barn, and I had to keep on running the buzzard away from.
If you just would, Cash says.
And Dewey Dale hasn't got a broken leg, and I haven't. Cash is my brother.
We stop.
When Dar loosens the rope, Cash begins to sweat again. His teeth look out.
Hurt? Dar says. I reckon you better put it back, Cash says.
Dar puts the rope back, pulling hard.
Cash's teeth look out. Hurt? Dar says.
It don't bother none,
Cash says.
Do you want Pa to drive slower?
Dar says. No, Cash says.
Ain't no time to hang back.
It don't bother none.
We'll have to get some medicine at Motson,
Pa says.
I reckon we'll have to. Tell him to go on,
Cash says.
We go on.
Dewey Dell leans back and wipes Cash's face.
Cash is my brother.
But Jewel's mother is a horse.
My mother is a fish.
Dahl says that when we come to the water again, I might see her. And Dewey Dell said, she's in the box. How could she have got out?
She got out through the holes I bored. Into the water, I said. And when we come to the water again, I am going to see her.
My mother is not in the box. My mother does not smell like that. My mother is a fish.
Those cakes will be in fine shape by the time we get to Jefferson,
Dahl says. Dewey Dell does not look around.
You better try to sell them in Motson,
Dahl says.
When will we get to Motson, Dahl?
I say.
Tomorrow, Dahl says. If this team don't rack to pieces, Snopes must have fed them on sawdust.
Why did he feed them on sawdust, Dahl? I say.
Look, Dahl says. See?
Now there are 9 of them, tall in little tall black circles.
When we come to the foot of the hill, Pa stops and Dahl and Dewey Dell and I get out.
Cash can't walk because he has a broken leg.
Come up, mules,
Pa says.
The mules walk hard. The wagon creaks. Dahl and Dewey Dell and I walk behind the wagon up the hill. When we come to the top of the hill, Pa stops and we get back into the wagon.
Now there are 10 of them, tall in little tall black circles on the sky.
Mosley. I happened to look up and saw her outside the window, looking in. Not close to the glass and not looking at anything in particular. Just standing there with her head turned this way and her eyes full on me and kind of blank, too. Like she was waiting for a sign. When I looked up again, she was moving toward the door. She kind of bumbled at the screen door a minute, like they do, and came in. She had on a stiff-brimmed straw hat sitting on the top of her head, and she was carrying a package wrapped in newspaper. I thought that she had a quarter or a dollar at the most, and that after she stood around a while, she'd maybe buy a cheap comb or a bottle of nigger toilet water, so I never disturbed her for a minute or so except to notice that she was pretty in a kind of sullen, awkward way, and that she looked a sight better in her gingham dress and her own complexion than she would after she bought whatever she would finally decide on, or tell that she wanted. I knew that she had already decided before she came in. But you have to let them take their time. So I went on with what I was doing, figuring to let Albert wait on her when he caught up at the fountain, when he came back to me.
That woman, he said, you better see what she wants.
What does she want? I said.
I don't know. I can't get anything out of her. You better wait on her.
So I went around the counter. I saw that she was barefooted, standing with her feet flat and easy on the floor, like she was used to it. She was looking at me hard, holding the package. I saw she had about as black a pair of eyes as ever I saw, and she was a stranger. I never remembered seeing her in Motson before. What can I do for you? I said. Still, she didn't say anything. She stared at me without winking. Then she looked back at the folks at the fountain. Then she looked past me, toward the back of the store. "Do you want to look at some toilet things?" I said. "Or is it medicine you want?"
"That's it," she said.
She looked quick back at the fountain again. So I thought maybe her ma or somebody had sent her in for some of this female dope and she was ashamed to ask for it. I knew she couldn't have a complexion like hers and use it herself, let alone not being much more than old enough to barely know what it was for. It's a shame, the way they poison themselves with it. But a man's got to stock it or go out of business in this country. "Oh," I said, "what do you use?"
"We have..."
She looked at me again, almost like she had said hush, and looked toward the back of the store again.
"I'd liefer go back there," she said.
"All right," I said. "You have to humor them. You save time by it." I followed her to the back. She put her hand on the gate. "There's nothing back there but the prescription case," I said. "What do you want?" She stopped and looked at me. It was like she had taken some kind of a lid off her face, her eyes. It was her eyes, kind of dumb and hopeful and sullenly willing to be disappointed all at the same time. But she was in trouble of some sort. I could see that. "What's your trouble?" I said. "Tell me what it is you want. I'm pretty busy." I wasn't meaning to hurry her, but a man just hasn't got the time they have out there.
"It's the female trouble," she said.
"Oh," I said, "is that all?" I thought maybe she was younger than she looked, and her first one had scared her, or maybe one had been a little abnormal, as it will in young women. "Where's your ma?" I said. "Haven't you got one?"
"She's out yonder in the wagon," she said.
"Why not talk to her about it before you take any medicine?" I said. "Any woman would have told you about it." She looked at me, and I looked at her again and said, "How old are you?"
17,
she said. "Oh," I said. "I thought maybe you were..." She was watching me. But then in the eyes, all of them looked like they had no age and knew everything in the world anyhow. "Are you too regular or not regular enough?" She quit looking at me, but she didn't move.
"Yes," she said. "I reckon so. Yes."
"Well, which?" I said. "Don't you know?" "It's a crime and a shame. But after all, they'll buy it from somebody." She stood there, not looking at me. "You want something to stop it?" I said. "Is that it?"
"No,"
she said.
"That's it. It's already stopped."
"Well, what?" Her face was lowered a little still, like they do in all their dealings with a man so he don't ever know just where the lightning will strike next. "You're not married, are you?" I said.
"No."
"Oh," I said. "And how long has it been since it stopped? About 5 months, maybe?"
"It ain't been but 2, she said.
"Well, I haven't got anything in my store you want to buy," I said, "unless it's a nipple. And I'd advise you to buy that and go back home and tell your pa, if you have one, and let him make somebody buy you a wedding license. Was that all you wanted?" But she just stood there, not looking at me.
"I got the money to pay you," she said.
"Is it your own? Or did he act enough of a man to give you the money?"
"He gave it to me. $10. He said that would be enough."
$1,000 wouldn't be enough in my store, and 10 cents wouldn't be enough, I said. You take my advice and go home and tell your pa or your brothers if you have any, or the first man you come to in the road. But she didn't move. Leif said I could get it at the drugstore. He said to tell you me and him wouldn't never tell nobody you sold it to us. And I just wish your precious Leif had come forward himself. That's what I wish. I don't know. I'd have had a little respect for him then. And you can go back and tell him I said so, if he ain't halfway to Texas by now, which I don't doubt. Me, a respectable druggist that's kept store and raised a family and been a church member for 56 years in this town. I'm a good mind to tell your folks myself, if I can just find who they are. She looked at me now, her eyes and face kind of blank again, like when I first saw her through the window. I didn't know, she said. He told me I could get something at the drugstore. He said they might not want to sell it to me, but if I had $10 and told them I wouldn't never tell nobody. He never said this drugstore, I said. If he did or mentioned my name, I defy him to prove it. I defy him to repeat it, or I'll prosecute him to the full extent of the law, and you can tell him so. But maybe another drugstore would, she said. Then I don't want to know it. Me, that's... Then I looked at her. But it's a hard life they have. Sometimes a man... If there can ever be any excuse for sin, which it can't be. And then... Life wasn't made to be easy on folks. They wouldn't ever have any reason to be good and die. Look here, I said. You get that notion out of your head. The Lord gave you what you have, even if he did use the devil to do it. You let him take it away from you if it's his will to do so. You go on back to Leif, and you and him take that $10... and get married with it. Leif said I could get something at the drugstore, she said. Then go and get it, I said. You won't get it here. She went out, carrying the package, her feet making a little hissing on the floor. She bumbled again at the door and went out. I could see her through the glass going on down the street. It was Albert told me about the rest of it. He said the wagon was stopped in front of Grummet's hardware store, with the ladies all scattering up and down the street with handkerchiefs to their noses, and a crowd of hard-nosed men and boys standing around the wagon, listening to the marshal arguing with the man. He was a kind of tall, gaunted man sitting on the wagon, saying it was a public street and he reckoned he had as much right there as anybody, and the marshal telling him he would have to move on. Folks couldn't stand it. It had been dead 8 days, Albert said. They came from some place out in Yoknapatawpha County, trying to get to Jefferson with it. It must have been like a piece of rotten cheese coming into an anthill. In that ramshackle wagon that Albert said folks were scared would fall all to pieces before they could get it out of town, with that homemade box and another fellow with a broken leg lying on a quilt on top of it, and the father and a little boy sitting on the seat and the marshal trying to make them get out of town. It's a public street, the man says. I reckon we can stop to buy something same as every other man. We got the money to pay for it, and it ain't airy law that says a man can't spend his money where he wants. They had stopped to buy some cement. The other son was in Grummet's, trying to make Grummet break a sack and let him have 10 cents worth, and finally Grummet broke the sack to get him out. They wanted the cement to fix the fellow's broken leg some way. Why, you'll kill him, the marshal said. You'll cause him to lose his leg. You take him on to a doctor, and you get this thing buried soon as you can. Don't you know you're liable to jail for endangering the public health? We're doing the best we can, the father said. Then he told a long tale about how they had to wait for the wagon to come back, and how the bridge was washed away, and how they went 8 miles to another bridge, and it was gone too, so they came back and swum the ford, and the mules got drowned, and how they got another team and found that the road was washed out, and they had to come clean around by Motson, and then the one with the cement came back and told him to shut up. "We'll be gone in a minute," he told the marshal. "We never aimed to bother nobody," the father said. "You take that fella to a doctor," the marshal told the one with the cement. "I reckon he's all right," he said. "It ain't that we're hard-hearted," the marshal said, "but I reckon you can tell yourself how it is."
"Sure," the other said. "We'll take out soon as Dewey Dell comes back. She went to deliver a package."
So they stood there with the folks backed off with handkerchiefs to their faces, until in a minute the girl came up with that newspaper package. "Come on," the one with the cement said. "We've lost too much time." So they got in the wagon and went on. And when I went to supper, it still seemed like I could smell it. And the next day I met the marshal, and I began to sniff and said, "Smell anything?" "I reckon they're in Jefferson by now," he said. "Or in jail." "Well, thank the Lord it's not our jail." "That's a fact," he said.
Darl. "Here's a place," Pa says. He pulls the team up and sits looking at the house. "We could get some water over yonder." "All right," I say. "You'll have to borrow a bucket from them, Dewey Dell." "God knows," Pa says. "I wouldn't be beholden. God knows." "If you see a good-sized can, you might bring it," I say. Dewey Dell gets down from the wagon, carrying the package. "You had more trouble than you expected, selling those cakes in Motson," I say. How do our lives ravel out into the no wind, no sound, the weary gestures, wearily recapitulant? Echoes of old compulsions with no hand on no strings. In sunset, we fall into furious attitudes, dead gestures of dolls. Cash broke his leg, and now the sawdust is running out. He is bleeding to death, is Cash. "I wouldn't be beholden," Pa says. "God knows." "Then make some water yourself," I say. "We can use Cash's hat." When Dewey Dell comes back, the man comes with her. Then he stops, and she comes on, and he stands there, and after a while he goes back to the house and stands on the porch, watching us. "We better not try to lift him down," Pa says. "We can fix it here." "Do you want to be lifted down, Cash?" I say. "Won't we get to Jefferson tomorrow?" he says. He is watching us, his eyes interrogatory, intent, and sad. "I can last it out." "It'll be easier on you," Pa says. "It'll keep it from rubbing together." "I can last it," Cash says. "We'll lose time stopping." "We done bought the cement now," Pa says. "I could last it," Cash says. "It ain't but one more day. It don't bother to speak of." He looks at us, his eyes wide in his thin gray face, questioning. "It sets up so," he says. "We done bought it now," Pa says. I mix the cement in the can, stirring the slow water into the pale green thick coils. I bring the can to the wagon where Cash can see. He lies on his back, his thin profile in silhouette, ascetic and profound against the sky. "Does that look about right?" I say. "You don't want too much water, or it won't work right," he says. "Is this too much?" "Maybe if you could get a little sand," he says. "It ain't but one more day," he says. "It don't bother me none."